This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, Whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more five-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain.
As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Michael Sacca.
I'm Joelle Steiniger.
And I'm Matt Goldman.
And we're having 20-minute talks with entrepreneurs teaching you how to launch your product into revenue.
Check out our book at howtobuildarocketship.com to reserve your launch discount and to download a free chapter. Today we talked with Drew Stroney, former NFL player who went on to start a successful WordPress theme company and is now shifting focus to his product, Memberful. We learned about how Memberful was built internally out of necessity and later opened to the public. We also talk about how to stay positive and hungry despite moving slower than your competition when you have a tiny team.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. We're here with Drew Stroney, the founder of The Theme Foundry and Memberful. Drew, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Michael, for having me.
Absolutely. So you were drafted into the NFL in 2004, and in 2007... you started the Theme Foundry. Tell us a little bit about that transition.
Yeah, so I went to Duke University. I graduated in 2003. I played football in high school and then played football in college and was somewhat successful at it. So ended up getting drafted by the New York Giants in 2004. I was a seventh round pick, so I wasn't like a high draft pick. I didn't get millions of dollars or anything crazy. I think my, you know, signing bonus was like $40,000. And I was a journeyman in the NFL, which basically means I bounced around to a lot of different teams. I didn't really stick with any teams. I didn't play. I just was kind of trying to make it for, and I did that for 3 years, and I never really stuck anywhere, but it was a really fun and exciting journey. And, and obviously a great experience. So when I finished that, my girlfriend at the time, who's my wife now, we had been living in a lot of different cities. We had lived in Tampa. We had lived in St. Louis. And we lived in Philadelphia. And they're all great cities. Most recently, we were in St. Louis. But we were looking to kind of do something totally different because we had been kind of forced to live in those cities. It wasn't like, hey, you guys can choose there. It's just, you know, this is where the job is, so you have to go there. So now that we were done and we had a little bit of money saved up, we said, let's just go do something, you know, different and exciting. So we moved to Boise, Idaho in the fall of 2007 because it was a small town and it had great outdoor activities and it just seemed like a cool place. And most people probably have a weird perception of Boise, but it's really awesome. And if any of you guys get to go out there, you should definitely check it out at some point. So anyway, we moved there and decided to start a marketing company initially. And that was more, you know, I'd gone on a couple interviews when we got there for jobs, and I just decided that I wanted to try and do something myself. And Jennifer was on board with that. And so we decided we had this great, brilliant idea, which, you know, in hindsight wasn't that brilliant, but we thought it was great when we were starting out to sell advertising to restaurants, or in restaurants for local advertisers. So what we do is kind of do tabletop displays, and we would design them and then broker basically a contract between the restaurant and a local advertiser and take some of the money. And it was a good experience. It was a good learning experience because I had to put on a suit. I had to go out and talk to people every day. I had to learn how to sell, like, you know, kind of in person and really, you know, try, you know, spend a lot of time basically pounding pavement trying to sell. And we made it work. And, you know, it was just the two of us and we didn't have any expenses. So but we made it work and we were making money and it was successful. But I started to hear a lot about people wanting websites, and it had been a hobby of mine doing website design. I'd done it while I was playing the NFL, kind of in my spare time. And I kept hearing it and I always thought, well, it's not something I really want to do. But at some point it was like, well, we could make extra money doing this. Let's just do it. So we started doing it and, you know, basically at that time, WordPress was one of the only options out there really. And so we decided to use, you know, obviously there are other options, but it was the easiest thing to use with, you know, if you want to get a site up quickly and have it so the client could, you know, make changes themselves and stuff. So we started working with WordPress. I got comfortable with WordPress. I started to get involved in the WordPress community, went to some WordPress meetups and some WordCamps and did some of that stuff. And around that time, now we're getting into 2008 WordPress themes were kind of new, but you could see people, there were a few people that were maybe making some money doing it. So I decided to try my hand at a theme, and I just put out a free theme in 2008, and it ended up being really successful. It got featured on Mashable and it got on WordPress.com back when WordPress.com didn't have many themes. And so it kind of garnered a lot of attention for our little side project. And so after a few months of getting a lot of attention and a lot of traffic, we decided to try and monetize it. And so we just threw up a basic setup where you could pay for a lifetime membership and you could get access to all our themes. And in hindsight, that was a little short-sighted, you know, pricing it so that you could get, you know, access to all our stuff forever. But we got a lot of initial customers and it showed us the potential of the market. And you know, without going into too much more detail, you know, for the next 3 years, we kind of worked really hard at that. And it grew and grew and grew. And at this point, we've got three full-time people working on it, along with myself and Jennifer. And yeah, so that's kind of the story of how we got started, I guess.
And now you're focused on Memberful?
Well, yeah. So Memberful was a product, or it's a software as a service that we have. That another product that we have that initially started as a basically a side project for the Theme Foundry. It's like a need that we had because I wasn't happy with any of the membership software out there, and so we decided to build our own and went through that whole process. And then it kind of decided, hey, maybe we should try selling this. And then, you know, that's how we've got to there. So my role is working on both projects. I'm more heavily involved with Memberful because it requires more attention and there's less of us over there, but I'm still pretty heavily involved in both.
So take us through the history of Memberful. After building it for yourselves, what did the next year or two look like, and how quickly did you move through different phases of the beta? And is it fully out of that now? What does it look like these days?
Right. So, you know, we moved really, really slowly. And if there's anything that I could do again, it would be to move faster. And but that, I think that sometimes it's just a lesson you learn. And that's, I think that's something I've learned in both, on both sides of the business, the importance of getting things done versus having them be perfect all the time. And so it took us almost a year, I think, to build it originally as like a side project. And then we started using it ourselves and we really liked it. And then we launched it in beta last spring, so a little over a year ago. And then we opened it up to everybody last fall. So, you know, we've been open to the public now for probably 6 or 7 months or something like that, like, you know, fully open. So that's kind of the timeline, I guess.
And just so I understand, were you, you guys were using it to monetize on the Theme Foundry's site?
Right. So we were selling WordPress themes with it, which was kind of, you know, when we originally built it, we built it in a way that if you were building this product based on the market, you wouldn't have built it the way we built it. We built it originally because we needed it for a specific purpose. And after building it, we kind of started to realize, hey, like, we kind of built in some features that, or we made some features more important that really aren't important if this is kind of the market that we're trying to hit. So it was an interesting, it was interesting coming to that realization and then realizing later, like, hey, we actually have to minimize and focus and not focus on those things that we were actually using it for with the Theme Foundry, and think about Memberful as its own individual product and do its best for Memberful. And then if it fits with the Theme Foundry, keep using it. If, you know, if it evolves to something that's not going to fit with the Theme Foundry, then, you know, use something else with the Theme Foundry.
So that's really interesting. You mentioned that you would do things a little differently based on the market. Tell us a little bit about how you found the market you're going after, because I would assume that if you're kind of in this WordPress land, that it would be kind of a natural extension to go after companies that you work with and know well. But it appears that a lot of the audience and the customers for Memberful are kind of far from that and more on the community-based side and forums and all that kind of stuff. So tell us how you kind of found that niche.
Right. So in a way, I think we started to find the niche by when we built the product and started launching it into beta. So it's interesting. There's a big difference between when you're using something yourself and then when you actually other people start using it and you start seeing the ways they use it and you start seeing what they want and what they need. And all of a sudden your focus starts to shift a lot. So getting it into a beta where we actually had other people using it. I mean, when we initially launched the website and announced it, we did an okay job. We got a bunch of traffic to the site. I think it was on Hacker News. When I look back at that first page we made about it, it was so, the concept that we had in our head about what it was so different from what it actually is and what it's turned into. And that's all of that is because people just started using it and we started realizing, like, no, this is where we fit. It's not, you know, what we thought before. We fit more in this area. So, you know, since then we've kind of just followed what the market wants versus like the idea that we had in our head, I guess.
And how have you gone about validating that? What are you doing to get in touch with your customers?
So, you know, one of the things that's really refreshing about what we're doing is, we've got a small customer base, but our customers that use the product absolutely love it. So that tells us that we're doing something really right. And, you know, sometimes they want a few more features, but the core experience they really, really like. So and we're small enough that we've, you know, almost we've been able to talk to a lot of customers. And I've even, you know, in the early days of when we were getting started earlier this year, I would talk to people on the phone routinely about, you know, what they're trying to use it for, and you know, if it solves their problem and what can we do better and that sort of thing. So, you know, we try to talk to customers as much as we can. And the best ways to do it is just, you know, reaching out and asking, like, hey, do you want to talk on the phone? I'd be happy to talk on the phone, that sort of thing. And that's something that we, I did a ton of when we, right when we first launched it publicly in the fall. And it's something that I'd like to get back to doing a little bit more of, actually.
Hey guys, hope you're enjoying the episode. I wanted to take a minute to thank CodeShip for sponsoring the show. CodeShip makes continuous deployment simple and easy, and we've actually been ecstatic customers of theirs for a very long time. If you'd like to see how we use CodeShip to deploy our product Hookfeed, go watch the short video we put together at howtobuildarocketship.com/CodeShip. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
So you mentioned earlier that it's just you and a developer working on this.
Right.
And that your role is more of kind of the hustler, and you're out there talking to your customers, blogging, and doing those kinds of activities. Talk to us a little bit about what that looks like with your day-to-day and how you're kind of actively getting out there to spread the word about it.
Right. So I think a lot of it is just working hard on the small things. Like, you know, you said blogging and writing blog posts and talking to customers and getting out and talking to other people and talking to potential, I guess, vendors or, you know, like people that we integrate with and trying to get picked up on in those places too. But honestly, in the day to day, we've been almost like solely focused on product. We spent time trying to get customers, but we still felt like we didn't have as much of a complete offering as we wanted before we really sunk a ton of effort into, you know, I guess customer acquisition, mainly because we didn't want to spend a lot of time and money on customer acquisition until we felt like we had a minimal viable feature set, basically. I mean, the feature set that we had when we launched, you know, we don't want to draw a bunch of people that might be interested in it. And then, you know, there's some core features that they want. Like an example would be free trials. Like, and I haven't really talked about what Memberful actually is, but Memberful is software for selling memberships to your website. So if you had a popular blog, say that it was built on WordPress, especially if it's built on WordPress, if you have a popular blog or something and you want to sell like a monthly membership to that blog and restrict access to blog posts or ebooks or things like that, we make it really, really simple. So you basically just sign up, you install the plugin, and you can start protecting stuff right away. Members can sign in, they can see their profile, they can do all these things in it. And we've built this thing called Memberful Overlay, which keeps customers on your site the entire time. So when they click to purchase, it's just like, you know, like similar to Stripe checkout. It comes up and they can go through the process. And then if they want to manage their account, it's also a modal that comes up and they can manage their account and things like that. So, you know, we felt like there was some core stuff we needed to do better before we spent a lot of time and energy and money and trying to acquire a lot of customers, basically.
So how are you balancing that? How do you know when? I think it's one of the things that we all struggle with, and one of the biggest...
Right.
We could always be building more, and we love to build. So how do you know when it's enough? Do you have like a list of we need X, Y, and Z from our initial testing, and when we finish that, I'm going to go back to the market?
Right. So yeah, we do. And one of the things our target right now is that we're going to start really focusing on the customer acquisition this summer. We're getting really close to getting that, you know, that feature set that we feel is enough that we can then say like, hey, it's worth it to spend a lot of time working on customer acquisition and conversion and all these things, which are really super, super important. But sometimes I think if you get too caught up in that before you actually have a product that has some basic features that everyone really wants, then you're kind of, you're hurting yourself in that way.
So can you share with us what your customer acquisition plans kind of look like? Are you thinking retargeting ads? What kind of roadmap do you have set out for yourself?
Well, one of the first things that we want to do is just work on actually converting the people that are signing up. So we're actually getting a lot of signups, and we're our conversion rates to paid customers isn't that great right now, but we're getting a lot of people that are basically coming on and trying the service. So the first, very first focus is going to be optimizing that and seeing like if we can improve that first, because those are customers that we already have. That's traffic we already have. Those are signups we're already getting. Like, let's optimize that first and see what we can do to, you know, help improve that. And then once we feel like we've kind of unlocked that and we feel like it's we're getting the conversion rate that we want, then we can start looking at ways to like add more traffic to that funnel, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. We were just at MicroConf, all three of us, and Heaton Shaw gave a talk that was about, he talked about the funnel of your product and how you should focus on the bottom of the funnel first and work upwards. So not to focus on driving traffic until you know that you've optimized the lower parts.
Right.
And there's only so much you can do in each of those phases, but it kind of relates back to what you're saying about product features too. That's the very lowest part of the funnel. Like, is the product ready yet? And then you can focus on the signup flow and the onboarding and so on. So,
right. Yeah. And I think it's different. There's stages, and I don't know that there's a perfect way to do it, but it seems logical to me that it's like, if you think of it physically like a funnel, if you haven't optimized that funnel, why would you spend a lot of time finding more stuff to dump in the funnel that's not going to, you know, work as well as it could if you spent more time first, you know, optimizing the funnel and the market fit and all those things. And then you can worry about like, hey, now we need to dump a bunch more people into the funnel. And, you know, one of the things that jumps out when you're doing this is that there are real limitations to having a small team. And I'm sure you all know this. I mean, it's if you had, you know, venture funding and you could have 10 people working on this, you know, everything would just work faster and you could, you know, make, you could get from point A to point B so much faster. But, you know, there's also some, I guess, joy in working on it and taking it slow and feeling like, you know, hey, there isn't a huge, we're not in a major rush here. Like, yeah, we want to see this making progress. And, but we're not in like, you know, super rush mode. Like, this needs to be successful within 6 months or something. Like, it needs to be a financial blockbuster within 6 months.
Yeah. How did you guys balance that at the beginning? I mean, that's something that a lot of, we're dealing with it, and a lot of people that listen are dealing with. Did you guys have numbers that you wanted to hit with the Theme Foundry when you were first starting out? And did you hit them quickly? Was it just kind of a success, or was it something that you were like getting revenue from multiple streams until the Theme Foundry could stand on its own?
Yeah. So originally with the Theme Foundry, like I said, we launched that first theme for free in 2008, and then we started monetizing it in early 2009. During that whole time, I was doing client work too. And then from the beginning of 2009, for almost the whole next year, I was still doing client work as kind of like a, basically to keep getting money coming in, because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't enough that we could focus on it full time. And then in 2010, so it took almost a year and a half before we were ready to say like, hey, this is, we're going to focus on this full time right now. And, you know, we're not going to have to take on any more client work. And then, so I know it does take a while, but the Theme Foundry was also a different business. We don't run it like a SaaS business. It's more of a product business. So people buy things one off and then they're happy. And 80% of our customers just buy one theme, and that's what they came for. They're not, you know, paying us a recurring fee.
Interesting. But you guys do have that SaaS model in there with the $200 yearly.
We do. So yeah, but that makes up a smaller percentage of our customers, and it is a it is a component of the business, but it's not like the main model. And it's mainly just, the product is a website template. So people come with a need of like, hey, I need a website template for this website I'm working on. And if your template looks like a good fit, I'm going to buy it. And then, but that's all I really need right now. I don't need, you know, ongoing service.
Right. So what is, I guess, what's the biggest thing that you've learned that you've been able to use on Memberful from running the Theme Foundry for many years?
I think one of the things is the importance of speed. And I know we talked about this a little bit, but early on when I started, and I still have this problem to some degree, but I'm very much like a perfectionist. And sometimes when you focus too much on things being perfect, you end up slowing yourself down to the point where you're actually harming your business. And over the past 4 years, I've really kind of firsthand come to understand the importance of getting things done versus making sure that they're perfect in every way.
Yeah, it's so true. And it sounds like you guys are, there's a good balance because you launch, you test, you go back, you test, you know, and that's what really needs to be done. There's no set structure to it. But it sounds like with Memberful, you went out to the market, you talked to the people, they came back. Now you're building as fast as you can. And then you can go right back to those people who right. said, I need X, Y, and Z. And then right. hopefully they'll become customers, which is what we've talked to a lot of people on here, and that seems to be the method to do. So that's such amazing advice.
Yeah, just more, I mean, related to what you're saying about, you know, customers coming back. And I mean, we look at it like initially, you know, when you first start something like, you know, a SaaS product or SaaS service, and you have a very specific vision in your head of what it's going to be. And I think that's important. And I think that you need to keep that vision, but I think you also need to remember that, or don't take it so seriously that you just write off everything that people, you know, ask for. And I think it's natural to kind of cling to your idea of what you want it to be and to say, well, we're not going to do that because that's not what we're doing, or, you know, we're not going to go in that direction. Sometimes after you hear it enough, I think someone else, blanking on who coined this phrase, I read this recently, but it was like complaint-driven development, basically. Like, you start hearing the same complaint so many times, you're like, really? Like, we really do need to do this. Like, it's very, very obvious that people really, really want this. And no matter how much we don't think it's important, it really is important.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, I know we've been really guilty of that here. It's hard. And once you get into the complaint-driven development, you're kind of behind the curve there.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, and it's not a good place to be when you're just trying to get caught up with people want. Whereas if you listened in the beginning, it's a lot easier to kind of frame a product around what people want rather right. than your ideas. Totally.
Exactly. Yeah, you're definitely in catch-up mode. And when you've only got a couple people, everything seems to be crawling. But I think it's also important to realize that, like, you know, any great business isn't built over, or most great businesses aren't built overnight. And sometimes it can be really anxiety filled in the day to day and the week to week. But a lot of time these things take like years, and that's, you know, sometimes you need to be okay with that. And you need to keep plugging away for long periods of time before you start to see real success.
Absolutely. Did you guys kind of celebrate the small wins as you were going in that year and a half to keep yourselves motivated?
Yeah, I think you have to. I mean, on a day to day, just like launching features and like getting some good response from customers and seeing people excited about it, I mean, that's what's going to kind of keep you excited about the product. I mean, I feel like if you didn't get that feedback loop of getting some kind of feedback, you know, if you just felt like you were putting stuff out there and nobody cared, then it would be a lot less enjoyable because you wouldn't feel like you're, you know, making people's lives easier.
One last question kind of around that. Do you think if you hadn't gotten that kind of positive feedback, Would you have continued, or would you have taken it as a sign that maybe this isn't where I'm supposed to be?
Well, I think there's always points where there's peaks and valleys, where there's times when you're in that valley and you feel like we're not getting enough positive feedback, and you know, maybe this isn't the right thing or whatever. But I think you have to realize that it comes and goes, and you can't get you kind of have to keep your head down and keep pushing through. So I guess, though, to answer your question, eventually, yeah. I mean, if you keep doing stuff and you keep trying things and nobody seems to care, then, you know, eventually you don't really have a business, because nobody's, you know, using your service. And the thing that's really been, I guess, rewarding for us and makes it exciting for the future of what we're doing is that, and I said this before, but we've had, our churn rate has been really, really low, and the customers that are using the software, I mean, granted, we haven't been around for 2 years, so we don't know. Maybe all these people are going to leave in a year and we're going to say, well, we were totally wrong about that. But so far, the people that are using the software have been really happy with it, and you know, have, you know, told us that unequivocally, that they're really happy with it, and they haven't been leaving. So to us, that's a good sign that, you know, there's people that need this service are really enjoying using it, our product.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Drew, for coming on.
Yeah, no, thank you guys. It was great. It was great chatting. And I appreciate you having me on.
And tell us where we can keep up with you and both the Theme Foundry and Memberful.
Okay. Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at Drew Stroney. So my last name. And I don't tweet a ton, but that would be the best place. And then for the Theme Foundry, it's just HTTPS, thethemefoundry.com. And for Memberful, it's HTTPS, memberful.com. So either one of those sites, check them out. If you have any questions about any of either the Theme Foundry or Memberful, don't hesitate to shoot us an email. We'll really take customer support seriously, so we'll usually get back to you right away.
Awesome. Thank you.
Cool. Thanks, man.
Yeah, no, thanks.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Rocket Ship Podcast. If you haven't yet, pop open iTunes and subscribe to be notified of future episodes. We have some really great ones lined up.
And while you're there, leave us a review. We really appreciate each and every one of them.